Bonjour, hola, and hello, everyone. Welcome to Oysters Distributed Discussions. Join me, Allie Green, and a special guest each week as we elevate the conversations around all things remote work. We will move away from basic tips and dive in deep, having discussions around current remote work challenges, solutions, the future of work, and social impact. So grab a drink, go for a walk, or pull up a chair and enjoy this week's episode of Distributed Discussions. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Distributed Discussions. I am thrilled to have Laurel join me today, where we're really going to go deep on the remote work topics that you're scared to talk about. Laurel Ferrer doesn't need an introduction, but she's an internationally renowned remote work expert and industry thought leader, specializing in virtual operations and organizational development. With over 15 years of experience building hybrid and officeless teams, she now collaborates with the world's top remote-friendly companies as the founder and CEO of Distribute Consulting to strengthen design workplace flexibility, policies, which is extremely important this year, streamline virtual communication, optimize digital processes, and strengthen long-distance management strategies. Laurel, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh my goodness, thanks for having me. I'm excited for this conversation.
Yeah, me too. So it's a little bit like, you know, been there, done that, but it's a question that is still one of my favorites because part of the remote work community is being able to meet people from all over the world. So I'm super curious where you're dialing in from today and how did remote work play a role in you living and working from that location?
Oh yeah, this is very direct. So I live New England in the United States. I live in the state of Connecticut. That's right in between Boston and New York. And we were living in Denver, Colorado, a couple of years ago, and it was just booming economy there, which was great. But we both looked at each other, my husband and I, and we were like, we both work from home and we're living in, you know, suburb America that was just house upon house upon house. And we're very outdoors people. And so we wanted more connection to the mountains. And you know, it took like an hour with so much traffic to even, you know, see a tree. And we were like, you know, this isn't us. Like where we can literally live anywhere. Where do we want to go? And so we had this really fun challenge and adventure of touring a whole bunch of different areas and figuring out what's the right match for us. And we landed here in rural Connecticut and we have a farmhouse and just have a really quiet lifestyle here, and but still have access to the big cities and startup culture. And so it's kind of the best of both worlds. And we wouldn't be able to be here without remote work.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. I did the whole like living in New York, living in Washington, D.C., trying to like figure out like where in the US was there a city that I liked with a job that I liked, and realized that didn't exist. And now I'm in Spain right now and couldn't be happier and love actually like working with the US and Spanish culture, because this is like properly afternoon, even though it's dark outside here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Europe is our next trajectory. We have two kids that we would like to, you know, have their childhood in America. And then we're like, see ya. We're out of here. We got a lot of traveling to do.
When you're out of the house, we're out of the house.
Exactly. Don't have a home to come home to. Sorry about that.
So I am curious about what Connecticut has been like this year, because I often think about people who live in Connecticut and have those like crazy commutes to New York City with this like shift to remote work. What have you noticed in terms of like the community and how people are working and like adjusting to life in Connecticut?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been kind of this funny conversation with all of the locals here in New England. I mean, all the way up to Vermont and New Hampshire and Maine, that in the beginning of the pandemic, there was this mass exodus out of the cities of people just booking up every single Airbnb that ever existed and every spare cabin to, you know, wait out the pandemic out in the countryside. And it was a lot of increased tourism for these areas that was not expected. And, you know, as we can imagine with rural lifestyle, but there was a lot of people that were like, where are these people coming from? You know, like, you're not welcome here. But it was, you know, it was an adjustment, but it was fine. And then it continued, right? So we thought that it was going to be a few weeks, maybe a couple months. And now it's this really cool blended immersion culture that all of those people that left the cities have stayed out here. And so our market is booming. There's always people that are looking to still have access to the cities, just like my husband and I did several years ago, have access to the cities without having to be constrained by a daily commute. So yeah, lots of new population, and we're starting to see like the culture of the cities come into the culture of the rural communities. So I'm really excited about it. I know that a lot of locals aren't thrilled about it, but I think it's going to really represent what's happening on national and frankly an international scale as well. Is we're literally watching the rural divide minimize, and we're watching the hybridization and the equality of society kind of reignite a little bit and revive the Rust Belt and just really look at economic development in a much more mobile and empowered way. I'm really excited and inspired by it.
Yeah, it's one of those things that right now, like, I think people are still tiptoeing around what the new normal is going to be. And I like wish I had a magic ball to see like, okay, like 5 years from now, what is this going to look like? If people can genuinely choose where they want to live based off of things related to like them intrinsically and not like where they went to school or where they found the best job or like where they had to be because of a partner's job. And like the impact it'll have on changing how communities interact. And so this is something that like so into when I was traveling more often than I am now. I loved going to like rural areas. I spent a few weeks in rural Scotland. Like I had to take a train to a ferry and then get picked up by a coworker who I was going to visit and then like drive to their house. Like it was nowhere like that I had ever seen in Scotland. And like there was a group of like really cool young people and they were like, we don't know how to like show that this is a fun place to live and get other like intellectually stimulating, like fun networks here and like entrepreneurs, or how can like that even support local businesses in terms of like new restaurants or cafes and still have this blend of like genuine rural atmosphere, but like innovation and tech. So I can't wait to see what happens there.
It's going to be so fascinating because, you know, this was ironically something that we were really trying to force and design pre-COVID. We were trying to take virtual jobs to people in depressed economies to help stimulate the economy. We were trying to get people from urban areas to move to rural areas with their remote job to help stimulate the economy. It's like we were trying to force this. And then here comes COVID and all of these people are moving all over the world. And we kind of ate this slice of humble pie as thought leaders and innovators that we were saying, we were trying to force this. And all along, we didn't have to entice people to move. They wanted to move. They just needed the permission to move. And so, yeah, we're just watching these incredible migration patterns. And so now it really revolutionizes what economic development has been about. It used to be a very long, expensive process for any city to be able to attract the businesses that it needed to bring the jobs with it. And it was very, very complicated. Now it's not, just like business, right? It used to be very expensive to open a business. Now in a virtual business world, you can, you know, open a website and boom, you're a business owner, right? It's so quick and so accessible. And that's exactly what opportunities we're giving to small economies as well, that they can now compete with large economies and have the opportunity to market their municipality to attract workers, attract tourists, attract new businesses. They can just raise their hand and say, hey, we've got something cool here. Bring your job with you. Come stay a while. And that is really going to revolutionize work and travel and business and economy as we know it.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I'm curious, like, what your opinion is. So as people are making these changes, communities are making these changes, it's sort of whether it's true or not, it's always thought of that like the government will be the slowest to change. And so having businesses go in and be innovative and provide their resources to stimulate this movement can be incredibly impactful. But how do you think companies need to flex or adapt to these changes in moving populations and people kind of figuring out what works for them remotely? Like, what is the responsibility for businesses as we enter this next phase of economic development?
Honestly, I think it's to play nicely with government. For a long time, we've had a really big competition between public sector and private sector. And it's creating those stigmas, like you just mentioned, like government is slow and startups are fast. And right. And it's like, it is complicated, and there's an unnecessary competition that doesn't need to exist. And especially right now, there needs to be more cooperation than ever before. The businesses that are embracing remote work need laws to protect them and to protect their workforces and to enable remote work to work at scale. I mean, tax infrastructures, employment laws, industry regulations and compliance, all of those have to be updated in order for business to be safe and sustainable. And so we as a private sector now need government to update all of that legislation. But if legislation tries to do that without the voice of the private sector, it will probably be inaccurate or biased towards the public sector. So we really need to be more cooperative and less siloed and less egotistical than ever before, and really cooperate together in the public sector and private sector to make the changes that need to happen, happen. Like getting internet to everybody as quickly as possible, getting new laws rolled out, getting tax structures updated. Like we really need to work together to, because there is just so much work that needs to be done. We were running behind pre-COVID. We were already dangerously unprotected as businesses and as workforces because the proper structures didn't exist. Now we've advanced the conversation of remote work by 10 years at least. And so now we are all the more behind. There's so much catching up to do. We cannot afford to be fighting between sectors. We need to cooperate and work as hard and as fast as we can to get the work done.
Yeah. Besides internet accessibility and just getting everyone connected, if you had a magic wand and could like change one policy or one law that you think would just change the landscape of remote work, where do you think the private and public sector should be focusing on?
Oh, you know, it's hard to gloss over that internet accessibility because that is so critical, not only for business, but for everything right now. You know, like we have definitely ventured into the territory where internet is a public right, right? This is how we're accessing healthcare. This is how we're accessing education. This is how we're accessing business and keeping the economy alive. Like, I mean, that is, we can't ignore that. Like we really, really need everybody to have internet access as quickly as possible. So yes, that's a given. And
we can get back to that in a second. I already have follow-up questions.
Okay. So yeah, that's a definite yes. But in addition to that, I would say just basic laws of worker protection. So, you know, right now companies are not required to do anything about remote work. Like they don't need to provide like safe work environments, ergonomic chairs. They can discriminate as much as they want to against somebody that's remote because there's no laws telling them not to or creating a structure. And I'm not trying to make the employers sound like the bad guy, because most of the time they're doing it unknowingly. Like it's just, they don't know that they're discriminating against it because they haven't made the proper updates to properly, you know, adopt and manage the change management process of incorporating remote work into their operational infrastructure. So yeah, we just really need, obviously that's a big conversation. There's a lot to unpack. There will be thousands of laws eventually, but right now we just need some fundamental laws of like, okay, everybody's required to have a policy, and the policies should include these talking points, and just that would be a good baseline to start to make sure that we are protecting both the employer and the employee and keeping things safe and legal in this interim
Yeah. And I think what we're seeing happening right now is like companies don't know what they don't know. And so even if they have an HR team that has years and years of compliance experience, with the shift to remote, you hear different struggles that different people that are employed by companies go through depending on the stage of their like remote life cycle. And I think companies, whether like it's intentional or not, they're jumping to create solutions. And in creating those solutions, they're not realizing that it could be discriminatory or it could actually set someone back. And I think to the example of like remote workers are more isolated, which is like a study that happens time and time again. Like right now, the whole world is isolated. Like, let's be honest, I've been working remotely since 2014. And this is like the first year I felt like deep pangs of loneliness. Because exactly. I'm like, wait, like before I was remote working, but I was like meeting people, I was co-working, I was going out to lunch, like I was living my life. And here I'm like, looking at my wall for like, I don't even know how many hundreds of days. But the solution to that has been this rush of like sharing best practices around like virtual meetups and employee get-togethers online and creating budgets for that. And for a certain worker, that could be really motivating. But for the worker that doesn't want to participate in that because it's adding to their feelings of like burnout or Zoom fatigue, or they have parents to take care of or children to take care of, and then they're not showing up, and then people don't trust them as much or think they're not as committed to the company, and it's creating this like subconscious bias that they're not a good worker when really they're just like putting their foot down in terms of the boundaries that will make them feel good and do good work. And so I think that's like one example I keep thinking about is like with all of these different needs, how can companies find the right solution if they also don't know what the risks are in terms of compliance?
Absolutely. I mean, and you said it best, right? They just don't know what they don't know. And that is what we do all day, every day as consultants, is evaluate what remote models the companies have built, what the policies they have drafted. And they did their best, right? They really did. They weren't coming from a place of malice. But as we evaluate them as people with experience and expertise, we're saying, oh, there's a red flag. Like, give that 5 years, that's going to be a massive lawsuit. Give that 3 years, and you're going to have discrimination complaints. Like, you just don't know. They were trying their best and just didn't understand what the ripple effects of their decisions are. And remote work as a conversation about sustainability is a very different conversation than a workplace contingency plan, right? Like, that's what's happening right now is not remote work. This is an international contingency plan for a global crisis, right? So we, just like you said, we're not, you and I, not working remotely. Like, this has turned us on our heads as well. This is not normal work from home conditions. And so they're making these decisions about like, okay, let's just put everybody in different places. And so they're making these policies with the framework of a workplace transition. And it's so much more than that. And that's what they don't understand, is how much deeper this goes, how we need to update management strategies, how we need to update tools and communication channels and asynchronous resources and training. Like, we really have to update so much. It doesn't have to be a big change, but it does have to be very careful, and it does have to be very intentional, and it does have to be very specialized. And if they don't make those specific changes, then it's going to cause more harm than help. And we've seen that historically, companies that made the changes, it wasn't sustainable. They had to take everybody back after 9 months, 18 months, and it caused really big problems, like attrition rates up to 40%, like really big problem. So that's what we're dealing with as an entire society, is like, hey, look, if we can't get this information out at scale about like what this actually means, it could really hurt our economy. It could hurt a lot of businesses. Unfortunately, remote work was such a small conversation prior to COVID. It was tiny. It was up and coming. Yes, we knew that 2020 was going to be a big year, but you know, companies that were fully remote were not taken seriously. New startups that were trying to get funding for remote work products, not taken seriously. Like, we were really fighting for our place in the credible business world. And so most of the resources, the information that really needs to exist, it just doesn't yet. And there's no way around that. And so there's a lot of companies that are trying to catch up, trying to innovate really, really quickly. But, you know, when you do a rush job, you get a rush product. And so that's also putting us in a dangerous place. So we really just need to make sure that the voice of the experts, the people that are not trying to capitalize and opportunistically jump on the remote work bandwagon and are, you know, remote work, remote washing their products, like, we're making sure that that noise is cleared and the people that really know what they're talking about and have actual solutions that can help, that the path is carved for them and that it makes it easy for people to find the information that they have to share.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. And one thing that personally that's been very frustrating for me is it's been a year that we've faced this like crazy time. And so I feel like it's the same information being shared. And it's the same excuses by a lot of companies of this is a transition, this is temporary. At what point do we realize this maybe isn't temporary? Or even if it is temporary, it's time to stop treating it like it's temporary, because a year might not seem like a long time for, you know, the history of your business, but a lived year in the life of day-to-day remote workers without a sustainable plan has like crazy negative impacts. So I'm curious, like, from your perspective in the past year, like, are there any companies that you've seen that's made this transition successfully and have done things really well, or vice versa? Like, are there certain things that you've seen people just fail at? And what do you think the lessons to be learned are there?
You know, this is really interesting because, yeah, there are a lot of different positions that companies are taking. Yes, we've definitely seen some companies that are crushing it. They are doing so well. They're doing better than they think they are. They come to us as consultants, like eager and ready to learn, like, okay, we want to commit to this. We want to do it the right way. Teach us. We're ready. And we love to see that. And they are doing so, so great. And they are now doing this in a very, very sustainable way. And we'll be able to not only survive and thrive as a company, but really become thought leaders themselves and help spread the word to other people in their industry. So we love to see that.
What are some of the like triggers or clues that you know a company's like that when they're first talking to you? Like, are there similar traits or is there a pattern showing up that you've been able to recognize?
Typically, it's humility. If they're coming to us and saying, we've done everything that we can, but we know that we still have something to learn, that's when we're like, awesome. Come on in and we'll tell you everything that we know. The problem that we're seeing is that most companies have been like, oh, we're fine. We've been doing this for a year. Like, I'm now going to be a keynote speaker about remote. And it's like, that's adorable. Good luck with that. Because there is so much more. Like, we even, you know, have this in the remote work thought leadership circles of like companies that are founded by people that have been working remotely less than 3 to 5 years. You're like, oh, that's so funny, because you're like, you have no idea what you're doing. You don't really feel the pain points and really understand the longevity and what's required for remote work sustainability until you've experienced it yourself, until you've, you know, hit that 5-7 year mark and you're like, wow, I would really like to go back to an office. You don't really understand what you're missing, what you're fighting for, and what has to be built until you know that yourself. And those big pain points don't show up in a year. They don't show up in 3 years. And that's what we're up against as a big society. It's like, anybody can go remote. Anybody. I don't care who you are. Like, anybody can start working from home and have little to no problems for a year, 18 months. Like, no problem. And that's me talking as a change management consultant, right? Like, maybe I'm talking myself out of a job, but I'm like, yeah, anybody can do that. But changing your company in a way that's going to evolve it in a way that is sustainable long-term as a distributed organization is extremely difficult. And what's even more difficult and near impossible is to build a totally equal hybrid organization where everybody is truly location irrelevant, that your on-site employees are going to have exactly the same experience as your off-site employee. That is so hard to do that pre-COVID, most of the remote work thought leaders were, our messaging was, don't even try. Like, it's so close to impossible that it's easier to just go 100% on-site or 100% virtual. Like, don't even try to be a hybrid organization. The risk is too great.
Yeah, I'm curious, like, what is your opinion on like the definition of hybrid? This is something that like, I think I personally have some controversial opinions about, and I'd love to just hear from you. Cause I think even words that are being thrown around like hybrid, everybody's defining it differently. So I'm curious, like, what does hybrid mean to you? Do you believe in it? And now that you've like had an opinion pre-COVID and sort of like during COVID, like has your thoughts around hybrid changed?
They had to change, right? Like I still think that hybrid is the highest risk category, 100%. Like history shows that, statistics and data show that. So it is still the highest risk, but now we're faced with this reality in which like 60% of the world is now becoming a hybrid organization. So we're like, well, we got to figure this out. Like we've got to optimize it. So it's working with what we have. But yes, boy, howdy, is the terminology quite loose, because, you know, everyone's hearing these big announcements from big companies of like, oh, this company's going remote and this company's going remote. And I'm like, oh my gosh, no, they're not. Like, this is ridiculous. They are allowing some people to continue working remotely. Most of those organizations already did that pre-COVID. They're just locking in a formal policy. Like, this is all a publicity stunt, folks. And most of those people have no idea what that model is going to look like long term. They are just saying, yes, it's in the future. We're working on it. So when people are really like saying, oh, we're now a hybrid organization, it's like,
like, what does okay. that mean to you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So for us in Distribute, we have a bunch of different models and gradients that define what hybrid means to you. And it is not one thing. And that's the important thing that everybody needs to realize is hybrid doesn't mean one size fits all. It doesn't mean that you have an office space and everybody's going to come into it 1 to 3 days a week and work from home the rest of the time. Like it's not that simple. There's so many X factors. There's so many different layers that define hybrid and define employee experience. So in Distribute, what we do is like, okay, hybrid is your model. And even within that model, we have a definition of 4 to 5 different types of hybrid. So we say, okay, here's your model. But then within that, there's a whole nother layer of what are the policy terms that customize that model and differentiate that model from a different model of the same type. And then even within that, then you've got a whole different conversation about virtual culture. That even within the same policies, you can have totally different employee experiences based on the virtual culture of your organization. So there's so much customization to do that when companies are not working with a consultant or some type of expert or not going through the change management process properly, not only are they not doing it correctly, they're really missing out on an opportunity to access full benefits. Full benefits of talent attraction and full benefits of employee engagement and faster innovation and lower overhead costs. Like they will never see any of those rewards if they don't do it the right way. So yeah, when they're just saying, oh, we're hybrid now, it's like that doesn't mean anything and you are not seeing the wood for the trees.
Yeah, I agree. I kind of like to think that hybrid doesn't actually exist. That hybrid just describes like how you are positioning where people are allowed to work, but doesn't at all give any insight into how those people are working.
Exactly. It's a location decision. And that's
yeah, that's it. And it's like really funny. I think back to like a job I had when I was quite young and there were multiple offices in the same city. And like technically, I think I was working remotely. And like, I will argue to this day that that was remote work, even though I was sitting in an office, like the way we worked was all online. Those offices like didn't have to be there, except for it was like trendy and part of business and like culture in that era of life. So I'm really curious how people take the term like hybrid, remote first, work from home, work from anywhere, and like actually sit down with those people and say, like, what does that mean to you?
Exactly. Well, and that's what another pain point of this hypergrowth, right? Like those terms, we were still debating those terms in remote work land pre-COVID, that we're like, okay, so what word do you guys use? Do you use distributed? Do you use virtual? Do you use remote? Like we as a culture, as a community, we still hadn't really fully developed our own vocabulary.
Shared vocabulary. Exactly.
Because we just weren't there yet. This is so young. It's in its infancy. It's just being incubated as an industry. And so, yeah, we didn't have shared knowledge. And then, not only that, but then we had like this evolution that happened when the whole world went remote at the same time, and they interpreted our words very differently. Like remote first, pre-COVID, that meant you were an organization that was built to be remote. Like you were remote from the beginning. So you were fully distributed. And then but the world heard it as, oh, we're default, you know, we're a hybrid organization. And so we're defaulting to remote workers. And so we have like a remote first mentality, but sometimes we come into the office. And so we had like, as thought leaders, we're like, oh, wait, what? Like what's happening? Like you took our word away from us. We're like, okay, we'll catch up. Okay. So yeah, this is crazy evolution.
Yeah. I want to do like an event or like a podcast or something else that's just like people from different aspects of remote work, like a remote work newbie, like a company that was forced into it because of the pandemic, like you, me, and just like literally go through a list and like talk about the definitions. I do this with like not work related stuff, but I'm just like, even like, yeah, how do you define a sandwich? How do you define remote first? Like,
yeah. And it's so different for every single person.
It's so different. I just think it'd be fascinating. We need like a dictionary that is agreed upon.
Yeah, Workplaceless has one. You should go look it up. Workplaceless, I think it's like workplaceless.com/dictionary or something. But it was a project that we worked on a couple of years ago because it was the same thing that we're like, oh man, everyone's using different terms. This is annoying. So yeah, they developed a dictionary and I contributed to it. It's super fun. And now that's like the thing that I'm like, can this go viral, please?
Yeah, can people like edit it and talk about it and just then agree? And then those are the words we're using.
Yeah. And again, have that humility of like, oh, there's words that I should learn. And I'm coming into a community that already existed, as opposed to like, I know best. This is what we're going to do in our organization. This is what it means. Like, no, come on, like have respect for the community that already existed.
Yeah. And I want to talk a little bit more about humility. I know for me, before the pandemic and before seeing companies transition to remote work, I held very strong opinions about what an ideal work environment looked like. And for me, it was highly asynchronous, people living all over the world, choosing when, where, and how they get their work done. I have changed my opinion on some of those things after hearing very convincing leaders at companies explain why it doesn't work for them and their values and their culture. I'm curious if there's any strong beliefs that you've held as a remote work expert that have been ruffled up this year and like you're conflicted or you've changed your opinion or you're starting to question the strong opinions that you had.
You know, I'll say that I definitely had a really strong opinion about the level of experience that was required to be a remote work expert. You know, there were so many of us that like I talked about earlier, like, oh, you just don't know what it really means to operate a fully distributed company until you do go into year 5 and 7 and 10. And so when people were coming in and, you know, trying to be these experts they had this enthusiasm of like, I just heard about this and this is awesome. I want to be an expert. And it's like, okay, cool. You can definitely learn, but you know, you've got to have the longevity behind you. I still hold that opinion, but not quite so defensively. It's, I'm not, I hope I'm not as much of a snob of like, oh, you can never be one of us until you earn your stripes. It's like, no, I've seen people come in and dive so deep into their willingness to learn, their willingness to listen, and their willingness to just understand and comprehend the content that we have to deliver, that they are able to not only learn from us and catch up to us, but exceed us and really add to the innovation and bring so much to the table. So I do think that there is so much value that, you know, these newbies can bring to the table, but they do have to still listen to those of us that did have to go through those early days. And we made intense sacrifices in our careers, in our businesses, in our personal credibility to defend remote work and to make it possible for the rest of the world now. And we need to make sure that we are symbiotic in the veterans as well as the rookies. Like, okay, let's work together, because it is going to take all of us to do all of that, a massive amount of work that needs to be done. So yeah, I definitely had to eat a slice of humble pie there and remember that there was value to both sides, but we also need to still really respect the history and remember, like, right now the newbies are still focused on tools and like, okay, what software is going to solve all of my problems? And it's like, look, that's where our value as veterans comes in, because we understand that at the root of all of the differences of remote work is not what you're doing, it's how you're doing it. Like, we operated fully distributed companies without video calls, without cloud docs. Like, we had emails. That's it. Maybe, you know? So I'm like, we definitely have something to bring to the table, and then tools can enhance that. But that's really the core that your testimony gets stripped down to when you get past that year 7, year 8 is like, oh, this is up to me as an individual and how I'm interacting with people. And my emotional intelligence really has nothing or very little to do with true workflows and processes.
Thinking through that and like coming up with a new definition, what are three words that you think describe an expert at remote work, regardless of their like years of experience?
One that I always talk about is pain. That's something that I screen for in my consultants, is because anybody can advocate for remote work. Like, we're all enthusiastic about it, right? But, and anybody can tell you what remote work is, but very, very, very few people can tell you what remote work isn't. And you have to come from that place of pain of like, oh, I know what I'm fighting against. I know what I'm trying to prevent in the organizations that I consult. When you have that negative experience, it becomes so much more passionate and founded and credible in your expertise. When you're like, look, I've experienced discrimination myself, so trust me when I say to you that these policy terms are not sustainable, right? So I think that pain is important. I obviously, you know, experience, but more so credibility, that you, if you're, you know, giving a presentation or writing an article on managing a distributed team, that you've done it. It's hard to, it feels silly to say, but most people haven't. I think true vision. Everybody's excited about, you know, I don't have to commute and I can wear sweatpants and, you know, ha ha ha, this is so fun. Like, anybody can be enthusiastic about the opportunity to work from the beach. That's fine. But the true experts, I think, and the true thought leaders are the ones that really get the global socioeconomic impact of remote work. When you can have this deep conversation about how this is going to impact, you know, childhood obesity and home and family relationships and environmental sustainability, diversity inclusion, and, you know, reduce the gender pay gap and things like that. Like, when you have a deep conversation with somebody like that, you know that they really are coming from a place of authenticity.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about those things, but also bringing it back to tactical ways that people operations teams and leadership teams in organizations can start thinking about the social impact in the actions that they take. I'm curious on a few fronts. So let's start with hiring. There's a lot of information about how remote work really opens up your hiring pool. What should leaders be thinking about in terms of making decisions on if they are ready to hire only locally or if they're ready to hire globally? How do they know what's right for them?
You know, hiring and onboarding is the one topic that within Distribute and our internal team, and especially our team of consultants, it's kind of this running gag that hiring and onboarding is the one topic that everybody needs and nobody knows that they need. So we're always like telling our clients like, okay, let's look at your talent acquisition funnel. And they're like, no, I don't care. And it's like, oh, we're trying to tell them and open their eyes that this is a massive, massive mistake that companies make. When they do, they just say like, okay, well, if I'm not hiring local, then I'm hiring global. And that's it. It's just like this black or white decision to them. And that costs companies so much money. It completely blocks their talent acquisition funnels. It creates completely unnecessary expense and taxation and employment laws. It's a nightmare to track and manage. And you're missing out on the real talent. You're just going to increase the volume of applicants, but do nothing for the quality of applicants. So yes, we would love for everybody to start really thinking very critically and very strategically about how they are leveraging remote work and virtual jobs for their hiring processes. The first thing that they should do and at a very basic and fundamental level is choose locations. It's not just, well, if I'm not in this city, then I'm in the world. Like, no, it's not that simple. And that can literally crash your entire company. So you really need to think very strategically of like, if I can hire from anywhere, where do I want to hire from? And start to select very specific locations that are going to leverage certain goals in your organization and help you find better talent or decrease costs or whatever, like whatever the goals are of your company, select locations that will help fulfill those as opposed to like, ta-da, the world is our oyster. It is not that simple, and that will crash everything.
Yeah, even ideas such as like, where do we want the product to grow into from a customer standpoint? What do we know about that place? Oh, we can hire not only a designer, but a designer who's our potential customer. Or we know we have a weakness in asynchronous communication. So for right now, like this part of the world might not make sense because it's going to fail before we are able to learn and grow into that skill.
Exactly. Absolutely. 100%.
Cool. So thinking about it, like, let's say, okay, people operation, talent app team, we know we want to hire in these various countries. They're quite different than the US. I think the next big question that comes up is the pay debate. Where do you stand in how people should get paid based off of the country that they're in?
Completely depends on the company. There's so many parts of remote work that everybody wants a magic formula and a quick and easy solution. Like, okay, what's the model for this? And how do I do this? And what are the step-by-step instructions for this? And it's like, number one, doesn't exist. Number two, it shouldn't exist because remote work isn't one size fits all. It's not, you know, it's not a model. It's a strategy that can and should be customized. So based on all of the X factors of the company, like where they are attracting talent from, where they want to recruit talent from, what are their tax implications? Where is their target market? What are all the time zone operations? Like all of those factors need to go into that compensation formula. What I will say is like, yes, for one company, it's the perfect solution to have flat rates and everybody gets paid the same. For another company, locality-based pay is best. It just depends on the company and it depends a lot on the industry too. So that's why it's important to work with a consultant. But I will say that this is our golden opportunity to really impact economic development and economic equality more than we ever have before. So we do need to think about it. And when we do think about it, that's when we can see incredible magic happen. But it's also got to be a very cooperative decision. It needs to be made very, very empathetically. Like, let's talk to the government of that country. Let's talk to representatives and local workers from that country to make sure that it makes sense and that there's not cultural implications there. Like, it needs to be made very, very carefully because, yet again, we don't have legislation in place that protects this process and tells us what the right choice to make is for our company.
Yeah. And I think hearing you talk about it in that way, it goes back to this running theme in our conversation today around humility. Like, you don't know what the impact of a certain salary strategy might be until you ask the right questions and seek out the deeper social impact with intentionality. So thanks so much for sharing. I wish we had more time. We're like nearing the end of our time today. It really went by super fast. And there's just so many things that I'd love to dig deeper into, but I cannot. So instead, we're going to shift gears and end on a fun game that I like to play with all of the podcast guests that have come on, which is our Pearls of Wisdom. So if you're used to playing any of those games where I just spit something out and then you say the first thing that pops to your mind, that's what this is. We'll spend 2 or 3 minutes doing that and then wrap up and say our good afternoons or good nights or wherever people are listening around the world.
So, I love it.
Are you Sounds ready? Fun. All right, cool. So what is your favorite remote work tool?
Loom, for sure. I'm a rambler and I like to be able to record my rambling so people can watch it later.
Favorite way to take a break when you feel like you've been working too hard?
Taking a shower. It's right across the hall. It's close and easy and super relaxing.
I agree. What is your personal biggest challenge when it comes to working remotely?
Burnout. It's really hard for me to unplug mentally and recharge. So yeah, burnout is a constant fight.
Yeah. More showers, less burnout. Yeah. Yeah. Who is someone living or dead that you would want to co-work with in real life when we're allowed to do that again in the world?
Oh man. Lately I've been watching Parks and Rec. And so I'm like getting this massive girl crush on Amy Poehler. I'm like, that would be so fun to hang out with Amy Poehler or like Kamala Harris or something. I'm like, yeah, girls, like let's get this girl power going and change the world.
Yeah. Women power and like all the jokes. You can't have a stressful day when you have a comedian working with you.
Totally. But they also get stuff done. It's like the light and the heavy together. I love their Yeah, so those would be my answers.
Awesome. And last but not least, what is the best piece of advice that you have ever gotten?
Ooh, I read this in a book many, many years ago, and it really has driven my life that you can do everything, just not at the same time. And so that really helps me like slow down because I have the personality type that I'm like, we got to do everything. We got to do it right now. And we get, you know, go big or go home. And so that really helps me like keep a level head, focus on consistency, and slow down, both on a macro level and a micro level. Like every day, it's okay. Work will be there tomorrow. Now is my time to, you know, be a mom and later I will be a boss. Right. But then on a macro level, it's like, it's okay. We'll get to it. And, you know, there were times in my life that I was the employee and now this is the time to be a boss. And I hope to be an employee again and go through another learning cycle. So yeah, there's just different phases. So anyway, you can do everything.
Thanks for sharing. I love that. Okay. It's like slow down one thing at a time, one foot forward.
Present. Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Well, thank you so, so much for joining us today. How can people learn more about you, about Distribute Consulting, and reach out if they want to learn more?
Oh, fantastic. So as you can imagine, distributeconsulting.com is the best way to find us and to get in touch with our experts and consultants. For me personally, LinkedIn and Twitter is really easy and great because I'm the only Laurel Farr. And so that's pretty easy to find me as long as you spell my name right.
Awesome. And for all of those listening, we'll have that information in our show notes so you can follow up and keep following Laurel's thought leadership on remote work. Thank you for listening. And thank you, Laurel, for joining.
Thanks for having me, Allie. It's been a pleasure.